Welcome back, WNST, Taos in Baltimore, and WNST in Baltimore Positive. And we are rolling through lengthy conversation, and I'm going to take it right back to where we began with the good doctor, Reverend Al Hathaway.
Before you do that, you're going to thank our sponsors.
Oh, you thank the sponsors. Go ahead.
We got to thank our friends here at Jenny's Cafe.
I would show you the crab cake, but it's gone.
It's gone.
The Reverend White, that was a good crab cake. Give us a review of that crab cake.
Man, let me tell you something. I grew up in Baltimore City. I understand crab cakes. That's a very good crab cake. I rate that a 9.5.
There you
9.5.
go.
9.5.
So if you're out there, get the Catonsville, try the crab cake. Jenny's Cafe up the street at State Fair. We love Fadley's. Amazingly, we had no idea. Fadley's is open 50 weeks a year. They actually closed 2 weeks.
We had you scheduled at Fadley's.
This is one of those.
That's all right.
It's good that we got friends.
That's okay.
And then we've got the upcoming equity housing conference.
Yes.
That both you and the Reverend are
involved
in. Anything
you want to say about that? Because I had Damien on. We did 30 minutes. I mean, we've talked so much. We began with blockbusting, right?
Yes, that's right.
That was an hour ago. But this is still a lingering issue of affordability, where to live, where to get groceries, all of these issues.
Yes. Well, you know, when you think about Baltimore City has never gotten correct, going all the way back to 1911, has never gotten correct. How do we create a equitable and just housing patterns in Baltimore City? It's just, you get banks that have redlined, you get appraisers that have followed suit with that, yeah, you get realtors that steer. How could this city, now you got to remember, Baltimore City was a planned city. It is one of the great cities in America. It has a port, the inland port, one of the deepest inland ports. It is a transportation hub. It has always been a city that has been commercially and dynamic, banking, rail systems. All of this happened in Baltimore City. And then you would get this layer of segregation that would pit communities, races against one another in terms of housing patterns. I think that was, if that is a sin, that was a sin that we need to correct.
That's the original sin.
That is it.
And it continued. I mean, I said to someone this morning, actually, I was on the phone coming in here, and they were talking about boundary issues in Baltimore County, and there are going to be some redistricting with some new schools. And I said, I'm really following with interest, as I know you are, the boldness of the school superintendent in Howard County, who's taking a countywide look at the people would be shocked at the segregated nature of schools in Howard County. Right. And he's making the simple statement that when we redraw boundaries, we have to be aware of whether or not we're segregating or integrating our schools, whether we're having students have different experiences or we're keeping them in silos. Yeah. Simple idea, but very difficult to do, right, Reverend?
It is difficult to do because one of the fears of persons is that there is a difference in value. And if people perceive that your values are not the same, of course, I don't want to be with people that do not have the same values that I aspire to. But the reality is that in America, we should all have the same value system, meaning that we want to progress. We want to have a work ethic. We want to have a value system. We want to have a sense of rugged individualism that you can make it out of your own industry and out of your unique intelligence. And you also want to feel as if you can live in harmony with your brother and sister.
Well, and it's why David Hornbeck, who was on with us recently, feels so passionately. I mean, Nestor said at the end, he said, I really like Dr. Hornbeck. I said, yeah, I kind of thought you might because his passion just drips. And he is convinced that if we swing and miss on Kerwin, we're leaving a generation of kids behind.
It's no question. I share with you my development experience. My development experience shaped who I am. And not only can I say that it worked for me, I can say it worked for the Ken Thompsons of the community. It worked for the Elijah Cummings of the community. It worked for the Sandy Rosenbergs.
Kurt Schmoke.
Kurt Schmoke. It worked for them. So that educational process and system where you bring people together of different race and economic, and you allow them to learn together and relate together, and you place as the bar academic achievement. You have to achieve who you are, where you are, with the capacity that you have. And I just think that when I look at the housing patterns now, I'm in Upton, 1200 block of Jewel Avenue, one of the finest blocks in America. Wow, you have a third of those houses are vacant.
And those are those big, beautiful homes, right? Beautiful.
Alongside the park. We right. see them all the time.
And so when you think about this Drew Hill Avenue, you take this span from Drew Hill Avenue, from North Avenue down to now Dolphin Street. Of course, public policy, and I'm really upset with public policy that would destroy this historic community by placing into it in the late 40s a public housing complex, and not even begin to think about what happened in the 70s with a highway to nowhere. You destroyed one of the finest communities. This was our Harlem. This was our amazing sector. Public policy has basically destroyed it.
Well, what do you want to see done with all of that? Dan Rogers wrote at length about it a couple of weeks ago, and my inspiration for all this, I'm going to Miami this week. I'm going to Kansas City 2 weeks from now. I travel the country for sports, football, baseball, and have for 30 years. I see communities rising, and I see communities falling, and I see the perception of what it means for me to get off the plane this week and say, I'm from Baltimore.
Right.
And what that used to mean, to mean crab cakes and Cal Ripken and the harbor. It has a different connotation now.
And
literally, I was on the phone with my dear friend that lives out in Western Florida. I'm going to see this weekend. And I said, I'm doing this ball. He said, I see you doing Baltimore Positives. He said, man, you're really, really hurting up there. And I said, well, I walk through the harbor every day of my life. I love the city. I live here. You walk through West Baltimore every day of your life. You have a different experience than I have.
Yes.
And I go back to the very beginning of a person like you who's made famous to the suburbs for being the African-American minister in West Baltimore who comes on after someone's shot. Mm. And I'm offended by that, which is one of the reasons I wanted to have you here, because I know there's a deeper, richer story than is being told. And we talk about the narrative here all the time about what makes the city better. And so the West Side, go back to that. And what happened 50 years ago? Where do we go from now? Because Detroit had to ask itself that.
Exactly.
Cleveland had. And now Baltimore's being New Orleans.
Yes,
and we're going to have that down in Charleston and in North Carolina after the storm.
And is this tied to your effort with the $300 million proposal to redevelop McCullough? So educate our listeners about that.
I share with you my build experience. My build experience in 77, 78, 79, 80, 81, 82.
Recap build again so everybody knows what build is.
Build is Baltimore's United in Leadership Development. It's probably the most powerful citizens organization in Baltimore City. It is written about. It is an example. It introduced living wage. It worked and created what we knew at this time, Nehemiah Housing. It built housing. It is dealt with education with Child First. It has done amazing things, right? That was Reverend Dobson helped me understand that if you want to do ministry, do it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Right? Then I go to Washington, D.C. and put together a similar organization in Southeast Washington, Anacostia. There, we do the same thing. Then I come back to Baltimore largely because of Jim Rouse, largely because of the Roman Catholic Church, to get involved in housing development. And I come back to Harlem Park. And I develop and become the director of St. Pius Housing. I learned then that during the Kennedy administration, one of the challenges to West Baltimore was that you had these large homes and you had what's called inner block parks. But these inner block parks was the affordable housing. It came in and demolished all of the affordable housing in Harlem Park. Some 27 parks. Took out all the housing and created parks. Right? Then what happened was, these are the affordable housing. Then after that, what happened? Of course, the Highway to Nowhere took out all of the other housing. And then you started to have owners now rezoning. Not rezoning. They didn't even do rezoning. They started creating multi-units out of these single-family homes. You created this density. You created this sense of poverty. You created this sense of people of the same income levels living in the same neighborhood. So I go there to work. And I go there with this St. Pius Housing. And we begin to develop a strategy around how do we increase home ownership? How do we change and configure? One of the things that we did was interesting, and I really am proud of this, was that in our community, you would put on the side of buildings liquor advertising and cigarette advertising. So one of the things I did, this was with the Community Law Center. We worked to take them down, and we work to create a bill that's a nuisance. We call that a nuisance. And that, therefore, you're going to inner city now. You won't see on the side of buildings liquor advertisement or cigarette advertisement. That was one of the things we did back then. But then when I, as I look at West Baltimore, I have to realize that these public policy decisions that have destroyed it have to be reversed. And I think that one of the things that you need to do, and that's why I've been actively working for, actively engaged in, when I came out of Build, that was organizing people. The next step of power is organizing money. And so I began to associate myself with large organizations that were finance institutions. One is Urban America. Urban America is probably one of the, and I've been a part of that for the last 25 years. Urban America is probably one of the foremost urban revitalization entities in America. Goes into Sumter, South Carolina. Their people is making $8 an hour. It brings in a Continental Tire company in the Sumter, South Carolina. Wages go up to $15.
How many jobs?
1,500 jobs.
1,500 jobs.
Changes lives over.
Changes Sumter automatic. So here I am.
1,500 jobs changes 8,000 people's lives,
exactly,
right? Literally.
Exactly. So here I come in, and I see this. We're making investments. I have Green Line Ventures, which is another. Green Line Ventures was GMAC's. They had a cap mark, and the employees bought that division. That's another. These are $2 billion, $3 billion organizations that I'm a part of. And then I come back, and I've been a part of the work back with Build. Part of the work of creating Harbor Bank. So I have a sense of how do you deploy capital in a community. So I look at West Baltimore, and I said, the problem with West Baltimore is that there is not the kind of capital infusion that will create a tipping point that will move it in a positive area. And so I then focused on McCullough Homes. Reason why I focus on McCullough Homes.
Now tell folks who are listening what McCullough Homes is.
McCullough Homes is a public housing complex in West Baltimore. It is
between where and where? Situate.
Okay, if you think about Pennsylvania Avenue, Martin Luther King, West Baltimore, Dolphin Street, State Center. If you think about that State Center, Utah place, it sits really as a part of downtown, as a barrier between West Baltimore to downtown, mm-hmm. sits this public housing complex. 35 acres. 35 acres. You have there on that 35 acres, you have 670 residents living in the town houses, the apartment, low-rise apartment units. So I came up with a strategy, national, credible, some of the best minds in the country to say, and this came about because of Mr. Trump came up with this idea through tax code of opportunity zones. Mm-hmm. And this sits in an opportunity zone. So, wow, and here you have the opportunity to have a model opportunity project because we could raise the $300 million needed.
Do we have any model projects going on here right now that you could credibly say I would associate with that? I mean, what is being done? Where is the model program in our community that I read about in Detroit, that I see about in other places?
I think the challenge in Baltimore City is that we have not taken in the African-American community, historic African-American community, we've not taken projects to scale. So we'd look at one-off projects so that if there was a comparison, you would say, what is the mind, what is the brain power, what is the talent, what is the necessary that created Harbor East? What is the talent, what is the brain power that created Port Covington? What is the brain power and the talent that's saying, let me take Michael Beatty and Donna Henson and Brazen folks, let's say, how do we extend a Harbor East and take it through East Baltimore, and how do we take the old Town Mall, Perkins, and how do we transform that? We need that same kind of activity and mind thinking in West Baltimore. And one of the things that I'm trying to do is to say we can think like that. We can envision 35 acres of rechanging a community. We can envision how do you have connectivity. How did I learn this? I tell you, I learned it. When I left from St. Pius Housing there in the 80s, I went to work for Neighborhood Housing Services of Coppin Heights and created the concept of Coppin Heights. That was then known as Ashco East, Ashburton, Coppin, Easterwood Park. And I went in and knocked on 2,000 doors of households in that community south of Coppin State College. What I said to them, you need a real estate definition for where you live. And I had them vote. Do you vote? Are you Coppin Hills? or are you Coppin Heights? And the community voted to be named Coppin Heights.
A sense of place, right? Matters.
Sense of place. It definitely matters, right? I went in, took all of William Donald Schaefer's New North Avenue signs. I took them all down and had them painted. Wainwright, had them paint the signs, Coppin Heights. Went up on the bridge, had him paint the bridge, Coppin Heights. Y'all now live in Coppin Heights.
Monday through Saturday again.
Exactly.
The work, Monday through Saturday.
They live in Coppin Heights. And then the next piece of it was to have Coppin State College, who saw itself as North Avenue, as a barrier, to come across south of North Avenue. And now when you look at it now, boom, this is a whole amazing. Here you have the state now, have built prison housing. Now you got the old Walbrook Lumber Company being repositioned. Now you have all that happening. It is the big thinking that changes and transforms the community. And when I come to historic West Baltimore, I don't see big thinking.
So well, in the other case, 50 years later, big bad thinking like the road to nowhere becomes an anchor in all the wrong ways.
But in your defense, you do have big thinking because you fought for and are trying to get some momentum behind a $300 million project.
Yeah,
Tell us about that project.
I tell you this. I believe, and not only myself, I have a whole ton of people that's a part of this, some of the best brains, that we can reposition 35 acres of public housing, and in those 35 acres of public housing, you can take the 670 persons that live there and you can move them from poverty to prosperity. From poverty to prosperity. Think about it. It's all financing. You receive a subsidy for your housing. Why can't that subsidy be used to pay a mortgage? If you pay a mortgage, then you have an ownership stake. Why don't, in the process of you paying for that mortgage, why don't I teach you what it means to be a homeowner and create what would be, everybody else know this, a homeowner association?
Well, the other part, I bought a house when I was 18. I got a break from the government. I was a first-time buyer, right?
Yeah,
like, the government wants you to be a responsible citizen, right?
And what's that old line that people use when you talk about mortgage versus rent? What's that thing somebody taught me as a little kid? That in the history of rental cars, nobody's ever washed their rental car.
Right, exactly. But if you think about it, unfortunately, at this point in time, the Housing Authority of Baltimore City is the largest owner of substandard property in West Baltimore. We've got to change that. And so part of what I'm suggesting is make this a priority, McCullough Homes, allow teams to bid on it. I am prepared to bid on McCullough Homes. I have already commitments for $300 million to redo it.
And somebody's saying no?
They're saying it's not a priority.
I know you're negotiating, and I'm not going to ask you to burn any bridges.
Yes.
Tell us as much as you can about where it's stuck.
Yeah, how do we get from point A to point
right.
B? How do we get this?
And I don't want
how
you
do we get this to 5 years
I don't want
now,
you to negotiate against yourself.
I won't do that. But what I would say to you is that I believe that we are in a very positive situation now with the current administration. With the current administration, we have an individual who is mayor, who has come up inside of the city, and who understands that there have to be real investment in all of Baltimore City. He's put a team together that is a little bit different than the team that I was dealing with the prior administration. With the prior administration, I think that they didn't see things in a way that this current administration sees them. So I anticipate a more receptivity to making McCullough Homes a priority. Here's why. If you make McCullough Homes a priority and you make an investment in McCullough Homes, that will tip State Center. Right now, State Center's been stuck for 10 years.
Stuck in the mud.
Right. It will tip State Center. Not only will it tip State Center, it will tip the old Social Security complex that they're on Green Street. Not only that, you got the Archdiocese coming in to build a new school on Martin Luther King. It would tip.
Well, State Center's been like the big kick of the can that's been going on for 2 decades.
Right.
And
right.
After we talked when we were down Fadley's, one of our very good sponsors. One of the real frustrations, Reverend, for people, when you look at that area where you have the Hippodrome and when you have Everyman Theater and you have all of this synergy that should be leading to massive redevelopment, as you're talking, just one after another, it's not happening.
Right.
I mean, you have this wonderful Hippodrome Theater. You would think things would be happening all over, and it's not. And you're saying, let's get McCullough going, and it will then have a tipping effect.
I think McCullough, to me, is the lever. It's the tipping point. The reason why I say it's the tipping point, if you think back, prior to the 40s when it was built, this was a vibrant community. So if I make this a vibrant community again, open up, and I learned this from Gaudreau. Gaudreau is one of the most famous architects of our time. When I worked with him on Heritage Crossing, he says, Reverend, you know, our city was the most best planned city. Everything that happened after that destroyed it. So he went back to the original grid lines, opened up the streets again, went back to the sight lines, how that your neighbor, I could look out my backyard, I could see your house. I could look out my front yard, I could see your house. So you go back to sight lines, you go back to original grids, and you make certain that there's economic diversity in a community. McCullough Homes can do that, and I believe McCullough Homes is a tipping point.
And you know, I think you and I have talked about this before. Our friend Kevin Kamenetz was a great believer that the anchor institutions in Baltimore City could play a real role in this, the Hopkins, the Maryland, and as they begin to redevelop, and he almost envisioned it going block by block by block.
Right.
Let's take this block back and revitalize this block, and then all of a sudden, it'll be the next block, and you'll look up in 5 or 6 years,
and the blocks
meet. And Nestor said, wow, all of a sudden, people are talking about the Baltimore miracle.
My team, you're going to Kansas City. My team's in Urban America's in Kansas City right now. We got a similar tipping point project there. It's going to be a $350 million project there in Kansas City. It has a local hospital as its anchor, and it's building around that. Here we have, and you think about West Baltimore, you have the hospital.
Kevin talked about it all the time.
You have not only the hospital, you got a major academic institution with graduate schools. You have MICA, which is an international. I mean, they could play roles. If they have an architectural division, they could play roles in that. I mean, you've got this is my concept. Live, learn, play, worship. And did I say work?
Yes, you did.
Why are you talking about that plan? We can't let you get out of here.
Okay.
You came out in the forefront. Everybody's got a crime plan.
Right.
Yours was based on the three R's.
Yes.
I think.
That's correct.
And I was intrigued by it. It struck a nerve with me. Tell our listeners, when the ministers came out and said, we got a crime plan too, and it's based on the three R's. Tell us what the three R's are. Because Nestor cares deeply about this issue.
Well, I think everything you're talking about, like why didn't the Hippodrome work? I live 8 blocks away. There's a perception that it's not safe.
Exactly.
So I live at the harbor. Why is it not working right now?
Right.
I walked through the harbor last night, the night before, the night before that.
Right.
I put pictures up all night long.
Right.
The perception is that it's not safe. I walk through there every night.
Right.
I've never had a problem. I live at the Inner Harbor. That's not to say that there aren't problems. That aren't to say that I don't wake up and see videos of problems.
Right.
I realize all of that. But one incident cleans out a whole city.
Yes,
and
does.
That is media-driven. That is fear-driven.
Sure.
And it's really led by the guy leading the country down the line and how it affects our city. And we need to break out of that.
So the commissioner has a plan, the FOP has a plan, and the ministers have a plan. So tell us about the three R's.
Okay, the three R's. Basically, people think of three R's in terms of education, right? Reading, writing, arithmetic. But when you think of three R's as it relates to community development and organized, it is this. It is recognition. It is respect. And it's relationship. One of the things we've got to do is we've got to work in our city to eliminate anonymity. One of the things that happens is that people walk through our communities. Nobody speaks to them. Nobody asks, hey, what's your name? Hey, how you doing? So you got to deal with the fact that you've got to recognize the human worth of another individual.
We were the charm city. Remember that?
Exactly.
Good morning.
Exactly.
You know, how are you?
To
nice to see you.
Exactly.
Acknowledgement. Eye
exactly.
contact.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. The second thing after that is that you have to respect that the person's story is a good story as well. And so you want to learn their story as they learn your story. And then the final aspect of that is that you then have relationship, that you develop relationships with people. And that's how you begin to mediate, I think, this whole incidence of violence that we have now, this whole incidence of crime. So what we did a simple thing. We said, hey, why don't we create a place? And we took part of our campus at Union Baptist Church. And why are the police officers sitting in their cars? And why can't they come in the community? Why don't we create a lounge for them? So we took a space and created a lounge. Hey, you can come out your car. If you need to use the restroom, there it is. If you need to heat up your food, there's a microwave. You need a cold drink, there it is.
And in your neighborhood, it might not be a Dunkin' Donuts or a
Coke. It's none of those
the
things.
Places that,
exactly,
that
exactly,
Don's
exactly,
or the county are available.
Exactly.
Sure.
So that the second part of it was you need a space where the community can come and have a conversation with the police. So we created a community police information center. Now, That is one piece of it. But the next piece of it is that we have persons that go out in the community on Tuesdays and on Saturdays, and they actually clean the community. I call them green ambassadors. So green ambassadors go out cleaning the community. They work 8 hours a day, got a sponsor, Wheelabrator, pays them $15 an hour, and they go out. And as they are cleaning, picking up trash, cleaning the community, they are interacting with the residents of the community. This comes in very soon. I'm going to have a large array of people coming to this community that's going to participate in that process. So if you teach people, you got to teach them.
I got to stop you. I'm going to, because you got me excited there for a minute with this green ambassadors and Wheelabrator, stepping up and pay them. One of the toughest issues we talk about are the young men on the corners with the squeegees.
Right.
Difficult topic because it's real, but yet it also has elements of race. We know all those things are there.
It's at the corner of my street every day.
And when you're talking about it, I'm thinking, wow, suppose we went to those kids and made them green ambassadors all over the city.
I could solve the squeegee problem.
Please do.
Like this.
Please.
Tell Nestor how.
Please. Then we're going to work on the dirt bikes on Sundays.
Okay, this is it. This is the squeegee problem. Because of our city, it finds itself disconnected with the state, disconnected with the private sector. It does not realize the importance and significance of our harbor. So you really never see us as political leaders talking about the harbor as it relates from the city's perspective. I had an opportunity growing up to work for B&O Railroad. So I learned about the harbor. I was 19 years old. I learned about the harbor. The harbor right now imports 40,000 cars a day, right? When you get a car, and I want to buy a car, on that car you would have what's called dealer prep. Dealer prep charges about $700 to $900. What dealer prep is, you bring the car off the boat, you clean the car, you put the mud flaps on, you put the whatever it is. That's dealer prep. What if you said, hey, you who are a contractor who has this contract, I'll take every young person that wants to clean a car, bring them down here, and you pay them $2 a car. 40,000 cars coming into the Port of Baltimore every month. That's $80,000 times 12. I clean up squeegees in the city.
See, solutions, Nestor. We said in the beginning, it's not just going to be moaning and groaning about things. It's going to be real solutions. Here the Reverend puts a real idea out there. Somebody needs to act. How do we make that happen?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Well, first, two things. One is the basic company is Howellman Ports. Howellman Ports has a contract with a gentleman, Edward Robinson. Edward Robinson was once in Baltimore. He's now in Hollywood. He runs Middle Creek, which is the movie company, right? He basically got the contract for this. Come on, Edward Robinson. You're a multi-billionaire. Come on, give up a little something and let us bring our kids down here and clean this. I think it could be worked out.
Now, I'm not going to let the I can't let the Reverend out of
here. What kind of tree would you be if you were a tree?
No. I can't let him out of here because I know it's near and dear to his heart. So we can't bring him all the way out here and not give you a couple minutes to talk about why people should care about historical black colleges and universities.
Yeah. You have to realize that the
tell role, folks what they are.
Yeah, historic black colleges and universities. You're talking about Baltimore City. You have two. You have Coppin State College, and you have Coppin State University, and you have Morgan State
University. By the way,
Coppin's
our partner. We run all the Coppin games. Oh, we're the flagship of Coppin.
Right.
So
and then of course, you got Bowie State University. Then you got University of Maryland Eastern Shore, right? So you talk about the importance of that. This statistic is blended now, but every 7 of every 10 African-American graduate comes from a historic HABCU.
70%.
Right? And the reason why that's important is that the nature of the HBCU is nurturing. I'll treat you, I'll come to you as you are, and as that process, I will make you an academic superstar. So in my family, I have two children. My son went to Morgantown, went to West Virginia University. Fine education. Brilliant young man. My daughter went to Morgan State University. Now, when I look at both of them, I say both of their educational experiences were quality. My son got 4 degrees from Morgan. My daughter is about to finish up a 3rd degree from Morgan, from West Virginia Morgan. She finds herself in education. She is a academic advisor at Baltimore City Community College. She has an affinity for how do I help people and why did I do that? My son.
Can't imagine where that came from.
My son is a businessman.
He's an attorney too, right?
He's an attorney. Yeah, he's got an MBA and he's got a law degree, and so he's a businessman. He sees globally. He sits and talks about billions of dollars. And I said, you need both and. You need to have the experiences that allow you to have mainstream business, mainstream cultural understanding, but you also need to have the sensitivity that I need to uplift the people of my community so that they have opportunity as well. HBCUs do that. They help you uplift people in such a way that you operate with inside their culture and you expose them to another culture.
Now, what kind of support worries you that they don't get that they need to get? What needs to happen?
Well, clearly, the funding of HBCUs as it relates to majority institutions are not equal. So here we fought this battle of separate but not equal. We didn't fight the battle around funding. And now we're fighting the battle around funding. And it was a strategic decision of Thurgood Marshall back then not to fight that fight. He dealt with the concept of separate but equal, but not the funding. And he definitely made a decision that we won't deal with funding now. So here you come back now 50-some years later, 60 years later, we're dealing with the issue of funding. Funding is paramount. I should fund University of Maryland College Park at the same level that I fund Morgan State University.
Pretty straightforward, right?
Pretty straightforward. Wow.
So we had a long chat with Dr. Hornbeck about equal and equitable.
Yes.
And not being the same thing.
Exactly. But here's the thing about it. I think over time, those issues will be worked out. I do think that we've got to be insisting that they do be worked out. They won't happen on their own. Power gives enough without demand. So you got to agitate. You got to do that. But I do find that as I have grown over these years, this hardcore, and it's just unfortunate we've got this person in the White House because that is not normative of the people that I've met.
We're meeting on the day after. I save this to the end because Nestor wouldn't be able to do anything else. His head explodes when we talk about the gentleman.
You have no idea.
But I told Nestor as I walked in today, I said, last night I said to my wife, and this will air somewhat later, so it'll be dated. I said, Linda, the president just took a Sharpie and altered a map from the National Weather Service to support a tweet that he put. She said, no, somebody's messing that up. She said, look at it again. No, that I said, and I said, no, it's on every major news outlet. Here's the map. We have a president who took a Sharpie to a national weather map to show a hurricane going where it was never going to go.
It is unfortunate.
Strange times.
You have never experienced a time when you wonder, does the elevator of the person who's the occupant of the 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue go to the top floor? We've never had that time.
Well, and a lack of, and we've it's been so positive. I don't want to end on a negative.
Sure.
But I said I'm getting ready to write. I wrote a recent blog on guns, and again, I'll give this self-promotion.
We didn't even mention guns. Right.
If you haven't, please visit.
That's all the other media ever comes to talk to you about,
that's
right?
That's true.
Please go to DonMower.com and check out the latest blog on the front porch about guns in the country. I'm getting ready to write one on decency.
Yes.
And it seems to me that the greatest theft that's been taken, the thing that's been taken from the American people over the past 2 years, and you probably preach on this,
sure,
is our decency.
Yeah.
I feel like
what's appropriate.
I feel our decency is under attack every day. Forget Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative. It's not about that. It's about decency.
Well, the attack on decency, the weapon that was used to attack decency was the weapon of that our disrespect. See, disrespect is it, disrespect fuels indecency. If I don't respect you, then I will not treat you as a human. I'll treat you as a thing. And so the problem that we have is that when I grew up, it was no way in the world that you did not respect an elder. It was no way in the world that you did not respect a person who was in an authority. It was no way in the world you would talk back to a teacher. It was nowhere in the world that you did those things, right? And so respect is the glue that holds the community together. This is how I learned it. I was in Seoul, Korea. Okay.
Nestor's about to go there.
I was in Seoul, Korea in 87.
I'm just going for the wings and you too.
I was in Seoul, Korea in 87, right? I saw a young man running in the village, and the whole village was after that young man. They had sticks. They stopped the young man, and they began to plummet him. And I said, "Wow, what's going on? What happened?" He had disrespected an elder, and the whole village saw that as an affront. Can you imagine if we had values that we respected to the point that the whole village saw that as an affront to the village?
And doesn't it take you back? What a wonderful place to end. Takes you back to one of your R's, that relationship again. Because as you speak, what I hear you saying is, we really have become too disconnected from one another.
Surely, I say this way. One of the reasons why, I had to get this in. One of the reasons why I have developed an affinity for golf.
We were going to end with golf.
Okay.
The Reverend loves his golf.
I was going to end with golf.
The reason why I've developed an affinity for golf is that it is a universal language. I've literally been able to go literally around the world with golf clubs, go to places where I don't know anyone, and because of that game, interact with people who say, come on and play with me. Come on and play in my foursome. Come on and play. And I've played amazing places. I've also, through that game, been able to have people who have private memberships to clubs that I could never afford to get into invite me in. And so I said, what are those kinds of bridges that allow us to develop relationships in our community? I think we've got to rebuild those bridges. And one bridge that I would say to you, in my instance, is golf, because golf allows me to interact with amazing people. But the real bridge is education. See, education is the passport in the world. And it is we've got to make certain that we provide educational opportunity to its fullest possibility for every citizen of Baltimore City, regardless of where they live. We've got to make certain that everybody has a quality education.
Couldn't be clearer than that. Nestor, I know you're not going to let the doctor get out of here. He won the William Donald Schaefer Award.
No, this is I was just going to say at the end, Governor Schaefer, you said that you learned that disagree without being disagreeable.
That's
right?
Correct. Literally. That's correct. That's correct.
And that goes to respect, because we are going to disagree. If you and I sat here long enough, we would agree on the crab cake was good.
But we would
have disagreements, and how we navigate that as brothers, as sisters, as human beings, that's going to be all the difference in the world.
The amazing thing about William Donald Schaefer as a personality was that he stimulated us to be community activists and community organizers. And he knew that ultimately he would be the target. I mean, it was amazing. One of my first campaigns was around the fact that there was not equal distribution of rat eradication in Baltimore City. They were digging a subway. And of course, you didn't disturb all of their beds, right? And so here you got to go and you got to argue with the mayor around, wait a minute, you've got to expand the rat eradication program from two sectors to all of the city. Well, you sat there and you went through it and da-da-da-da. And ultimately, of course, he did the right thing. It needs to be baited all over the city, right? But we learned from that. And what you learned was that, just what I said, you can disagree without being disagreeable. William Donald Schaefer taught a whole city of how to be involved in civic engagement for the betterment of the city. I mean, that's the value that he brought to our political processes, was that he taught us, from wherever you are, whatever perspectives you come from, you can involve yourself with City Hall, and out of the process of your involvement with City Hall, you take the responsibility of making your community better. That's what we've lost.
But you're not always
going to
get what you want, but you're going to be heard.
But you're going to participate.
You're going to participate
in the process.
And with that, class dismissed.
That's
I don't know
it.
About
drop
you.
The mic.
I don't know about
just
you,
drop
Nestor.
The mic, Rev. Go
I think,
ahead. Come on,
I think my soul is a little stronger today after spending an hour or so with the Rev.
I am so glad you came out and did this.
Thank
it's,
you.
It's been an
bless
honor.
You. Thank
pleasure.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
Keep doing
thank
the great
you, my friend.
Stuff.
Thank you now.
The doctor, Reverend Al Hathaway, we're at Jennings Cafe. Come get a crab cake. Come get some lasagna.
Man, that
might
crab cake was good.
I don't know. Burgers out here as well. Next week, we're at State Fair. We're going back to Fadley's. We're back here at Jennings with Sarah Heminger next Thursday.
She's great.
The entire schedule up at Baltimore.
We got
positive.
Ben Jealous next Friday. We got all kinds of things.
We got Ben Cardin. What else? We got John Sarbanes. We've got Brandon Scott.
Oh,
we've
my
got
goodness.
Who else? Bill Ferguson.
Bill Ferguson. All-star kid. Maggie McIntosh. All-star
I almost feel like Captain Chesapeake. So long, crew members. We'll see you next time on Baltimore Positive.